Hey, folks, welcome back to the DC3Cast. My name is Brian. With me, as always, are Zach and a returning from the grave, Vince. Welcome back, Vince. How was hell?
Oh, yeah, I was dead. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Well, you're back
It
now.
was, I'm back, yeah.
Here he is with his wife, Carmella.
Here, yeah.
All right, we are
Vinny
here to...
So.
Vinny So. All right, we are here to talk about a couple of comics that come out on, what's the date these come out? April 16th, I guess it is. Starting with Jay Garrick, The Flash, number 6. This is written by Jeremy Adams, illustrated by Diego Orlatugi. And we read the first issue of this. I don't think we have checked in with it on the show since. So we thought we'd check in with it at the end of the story arc here. And I guess I'll start. I don't normally start these things, but I have a thought that I feel like will be echoed, so I want to get it out while I can. This is fine. The entirety of this is to just introduce us to who Judy is as a character. And that is an absolutely fine reason to do a miniseries like this. You know, Jay is a great character with a lot of history. I have no issue giving him a miniseries and introducing us some supporting cast for him. My one thought with this, though, is we know that this this little corner of the DC universe was where Geoff Johns was choosing to play his last year and a half or so at DC. And it appears that he is on his way out of DC because of his creator-owned obligations at Image. And so, are we ever going to see Judy Garrick again is my question. If we're not, then I don't really know the point of this. But I think it's more or less fine. I have some issue with the art, which I'll get into in a little bit, but Zach, what did you think of this?
I thought it was pretty boring. But at the same time, I like these characters. And I want more of them, and I want more of them from Jeremy Adams, and that's where I think this is going to show up next. I think, I think we're probably going to get. I really think Jeremy Adams and or Tim Sheridan and or Venditti are going to take over JSA once Johns is done.
Let's hope it's one of the first two guys, you said.
Yeah. I mean, like, Venditti is like obviously an option because of you know, he is working on Sandman.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Vince, what about you?
Yeah, I do think we're gonna see her again, and I think Zach's bet about one of them taking over JSA is probably correct. I also, there have been whispers, and I don't know if this has anything to do with the Johns.
Lost children.
I don't know if this will have anything to do with the Lost Children, but there are some rumors that there are some youth based team titles that are maybe to come down the road. We've seen some art things by various artists that Rich has been on. Dirty Old Uncle Rich on Bleeding Cool has been kind of pointing out that, oh, hey, maybe these are for projects that are coming down the pipe. And I didn't see Judy in any of that, but it's being implied that, you know, maybe there's a youth team book or two coming. And so, you know, that could be a place where we see her. But I think Zach's point is more likely. I think, you know, we'll definitely get more JSA sometime. And it's probably going to be one of these writers that was working with Johns on this stuff to begin with. So yeah, I don't think this is the end. However, this comic, it's kind of the definition of fine, right? Like, it's kind of going through the motions to, it's like you said, Brian, or maybe it was Zach, the characters are fun. I like spending time with these characters. I think to spout a cliche, their costumes are great.
Ten out of ten,
but they're
yes.
per- Yeah, but their personalities are fun too. Unfortunately, to like finish this story, they finish it in the most like rote superhero versus mustache twirling villain kind of way possible. Like everything is so generic. The bad guy is a guy that Jay worked with all way back in the Golden Age when he first got his powers, and now has some like nefarious connection to him. He stole Judy, who's being used as a power conduit for a generic laser. You know,
I will slightly quibble with you there. It is hilarious that Adams is going all in on the hard water origins of the Flash and making it hard water. So I will slightly defend that because that is objectively funny.
I guess so. But in practice, it's just
sure.
Sharks with freaking laser beams attached to their heads, which is literally something that happens in this comic.
Yes. And also in Austin Powers, of course. I'm saying that for Zach's sake, because Zach hasn't seen Austin Powers yet.
Yeah, I couldn't have known that. Yeah.
Right. And then just like, you know, as fun as these characters are, and it kind of as good of a writer as I think Jeremy Adams is, when the shit hits the fan in this book, the dialogue is all also very generic. It's like when Jay like shows up at the lair where Dr. Elemental's kind of doing his thing, it's all very like, now it's my turn. It's like Power Rangers dialogue at that point. So I think just like there's a lot of charming elements of this, and I think earlier issues were better. But because Adams has to do the thing where, okay, this is a 6-issue miniseries, we're kind of only dealing with one villain here, there's not going to be any more layers of complexity to it than that, and now we have to end it. It's too generic of a finish. It ties a bow too nicely on everything in the attempt to make this a kind of a closed off miniseries that you can put on a shelf and buy in a collected form and serve really no other purpose than that. And it's disappointing that there's not like higher aspirations to it. But that's comics in 2024, I think.
I mean, I'll take it slightly farther than you did there, Vince, and I'll say that sort of the entire second half of this issue is just generic piece after generic piece. Like even after that, and that dialogue is super cheesy that he has with Dr. Elemental, but like then he's in the coma and he comes out of it after the tearful speech from his daughter, and then there's the barbecue at the house, which is just like, first of all, we've seen that barbecue, that exact barbecue, in so many Flash comics over the last 6 months, but like all of that. And I wonder if part of that is that, like, sometimes I think that the mission statement for some of these series from editorial has to be like nothing can really happen in this, because and I wonder why. I wonder if it's just that they feel like they need a clean, like you said, like a trade on the shelf to sell this, or if there's another purpose that's just like, listen, we want to do more with this character in the future, so please don't do anything that somebody else will be beholden to when they take this book over in, you know, insert time frame here. Like,
yeah,
I don't,
it's absolutely both of those things.
It could be both of those things. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Keep going.
Go ahead.
Okay. I have a point that I just don't want to forget
that I thought of
that we've kind of hinted at this in previous episodes, I think even maybe quite recently. Everything these we remember, yeah, because we did, because we talked about how you know, we always hate when like heroes are taken off the table or whatever, or killed or whatever, and then they're not around, but really that's the only thing, like companies are right when they do that, because that's one of the only things that generates like real drama and actual stakes, you know.
Yes.
I'm reminded, like, whenever I read a story like this, which are, as you said, they're all too common these days, where a character like for a page or two looks like they're going to die. And there's like the tearful goodbye. And then they're okay in the end. Everything since Rise of Skywalker is doing the Chewbacca scene where he dies and they don't even make it 5 minutes without reassuring you that he didn't actually die.
Right.
They don't even wait. It's literally the next set piece is Chewbacca's actually alive. Yes. Don't worry. You know, and that is everything these days. And that's the problem with, I think, like, that's what's so unsatisfying about corporate comics these days. And this is probably going to contradict something that I said differently 8 years ago, but like every comic does this now where they put somebody in mortal danger and then they immediately like bring them back. But they just did it with Beast Boy as well, you know?
Yes. Yes.
And in a way they have to, because they spent years and years and years getting shit online and catching flack for actually killing characters, right? Or actually taking beloved characters off the table. So you almost can't blame them, because anytime they actually do something like that, they get nothing but shit on. You know, they get a news story for like a week, and then they get like weeks and months and years of getting shit on.
Yes.
So but you almost can't blame them, but then it's so unsatisfying, you know?
There has to be a better way than those being the only two options. Like, you know, we see this right now in the Superman books. We talked about this last week when you were dead, Vince, about how in Action Comics 1046, have you read that yet, by the way?
Which one's 1046?
It's the first House of Brainiac one.
Yes, I did read that, yep.
So there is that scene in the beginning that I compared to the song Good Morning Baltimore from Hairspray, where it's Lois just like running around and saying hi to everybody in Metropolis. You know what I'm talking about? But the reason that kind of works is because it reminds us like, oh yeah, there are all these characters, and it's nice that, you know, we're kind of using them now. For a long time, these characters weren't really being used that frequently. So you can pull a character out of rotation. Like, you know, there are lots of characters I could think of just off the dome where, like, I would like to see stories with them, but we haven't in a while. You don't have to use everybody all the time. So I feel like, you know, one of my big problems with Heroes in Crisis was that they were killing off all these characters that they hadn't been using in years. So who gives a shit, right? Like when Commander Steel died, like, do you really expect the average reader to give a shit about Commander Steel? Like, you haven't used that character in 20 years. Why does it matter? So you don't have to kill them, but you also don't have to put everybody in the near-death situation and then pull them out of it. You can just not use that character for a little while. You don't have to make everything life and death.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're losing the thread here. I did want to say...
Well, wait a minute. Now, is Lois Lane Miss Metropolis Krabs?
Of course she is, yes.
Okay.
Let me regroup here because I had lost my train of thought. Oh yeah,
the art. He's got a reboot after that one.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I was in the middle of saying something and then I just lost it. No, what I was gonna say is the art.
Oh, you
here,
had it. Oh no, you lost it.
No, the art here.
You shouldn't have fought it.
Are you done?
No. Okay. When are we gonna do our Vampire Weekend podcast?
Soon, a couple weeks, I guess.
How soon?
After this Starman run, dc3cast.com, patreon.com/dc3cast, I will do Vampire Weekend.
No, episode. You just want to keep pushing off Morrison. We should do it instead of the regular show sometime. There are no good books coming out like next week. I already looked.
we'll talk off air about it. I'm not opposed to that. Anyway, the art here. It's not particularly my cup of tea. Olertugi's, you know, he's all right, but it's just, it's a little bit, everyone's making like a Dragon Ball face the whole time.
Oh, that's great. We love Dragon Ball faces here.
I know you do.
Listen to this Toriyama slander. The man is barely in the grave.
It's like me with Keith Giffen.
I don't actively dislike Toriyama the way you actively
dislike Keith Giffen.
No, I just think it's not a great fit for this character specifically. But I will say, you know, one of the things we say about flash art all the time is there has to be this sort of implied kinetic action. And I think that that is certainly the case here. I think there's a lot of movement to this and a lot of, you know, decently laid out sequential art. It's just not particularly the style that I come to comics for.
We know what kind of style you come to comics to.
I said come for, you fucking dickhead.
Yeah, I agree on the art, Brian. I think something that occurred to me while I was reading this is that, you know, we've seen art from this artist and it didn't look like this. So I feel like he's either experimenting with different styles or maybe I'm exaggerating, but my memory of, you know, because like he did some Aquaman stuff, I think. Something in the Aquaman universe, I believe. And I don't think it quite looked like this. And I was trying to figure out why. And I think he's kind of going for a Scott Collins thing.
There's definitely that vibe, sure.
Yeah. I don't think it's as good. I don't think he lands that, you know. But I remember being fond of his work on the Aquaman book. So it was bugging me that, like, why am I not enjoying this? And I think it was because it was coming off as kind of dime store Scott Collins. But you're right that it very competently tells the story. Again, the story's a little generic. It's a little, again, he's just got to draw like lasers shooting out of the, it's such a generic threat.
Yeah.
It's not all that exciting or interesting to look at.
I'm also going to throw out a name of somebody that we all think very highly of. I could see this also trying to do a little Todd Nwok stuff.
Oh, hey now.
Again, I don't think he's succeeding, but I could see some Nwokness here. Nwoksicity.
The Nwoksicity of our city.
I saw that Nwok is over on Amazing Spider-Man this week.
Ooh. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Or in an upcoming issue, at least.
Yeah.
He's so good. I would even read a Paul Spider-Man book to see his art.
Who's writing Spider-Man now?
it's Zeb Wells, but the whole joke is that there's a character that Mary Jane is married to, I think, or engaged to or something, and his name is Paul, and all the readers hate him. Because it's cucking Peter Parker, I guess.
Sure,
so.
Sure.
The run is not highly regarded.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Shocking. Anything else to say about this issue?
Todd Nwok kind of looks like Zach if Zach were aged like 30 years.
Now I have to Google this. Let's see. I could see that. I could see that. I feel like Todd Nwok looks like if Todd Nwok drew Zach.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. There we go.
Oh, that's good. That's rich.
All right. Well, let's move on to our second and final book of the week, Nightwing number 300. The main story here is written by Tom Taylor and illustrated by Danielle DiNiculo. Jesus Christ. With a little brief bit written by Marv Wolfman and illustrated by Bruno Redondo. We'll get to that disaster in a minute. But
disaster.
Those last couple of pages in this, woof. We'll talk about that in a minute, though.
You mean the Marv Wolfman part?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a very weird... We'll talk about that again when we get to
it. It's weird, but it's a
very
thing that
strange.
They do. It's a thing that comics do.
Yeah, but again, I have a whole rant about that. We'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
So, no, you know, I am obviously higher on this Tom Taylor Nightwing run than you boys have been. I think this is a really good issue of Nightwing. I think that this is a fun way to celebrate Nightwing in terms of the number 300, which is, you know, sort of the legacy numbering here. But also, I think it just does a good job of sort of reminding us of what the Bat family status quo is right now. And I really love the relationship that Taylor specifically has been building between the different Robins in this book and over in Titans also, just generally how he's handling the Bat siblings, for lack of a better term. And I'm a big sucker for Babs and Dick romance stories, so I like that part of it. And, yeah, you know, this is a bit of a slight issue. I'm not going to say that it's groundbreaking in any way, but I just think it does a really good job of illustrating why Dick Grayson is so important to the DC universe, which I know is sort of that's been Tom Taylor's whole thesis on this book, is just this is why you should care about Dick Grayson. But to me, it works. I am really a fan of what he's doing with the character. I think DiNiccolo's art also looks pretty good here. It's certainly different than Bruno Redondo, who is the artist we've sort of most associated with the Tom Taylor run so far. It's a little bit more youthful looking. And I think that for this story, it does work. And I really like how Dick is positioned in the DC universe right now. And so I enjoyed the main part of this story quite a bit. I'm going to guess that you guys were less high on this than I was. I know this is Brian Knipp, just designed to make me happy.
You want me to go, Zach?
Yeah, you go ahead.
I'm a little less high on it than you, but I don't think, I mean, the parts that I liked, I really liked. So like the setup to this issue, which is like an illegal arms deal on the Gotham docks, is a fairly generic opener, but that's okay because the way that Taylor does it by teaming up all the Robins to take this on, like you said, it's a reminder of kind of what the status quo is. But not only that, it really reminded me of the way that like an episode of the animated series would start, you know?
That's a good call.
Like the character, like the Robins are all getting into something. You don't quite know what's up yet. They're bouncing off of one another, showing a lot of personality. It's very much structured in that way. And it's swashbuckling in a way that like the kid in me really likes. So the setup was good. The stuff where again, he's like you said, explaining kind of the current Bat status quo in a very economical way, that all works very much in the book's favor. I think the stuff with Babs is great. The fact that it's Dick's birthday, and for his birthday, he gets to do things for everybody else and nobody can say anything about it, that's like a great Dick characterization. It's a good turning on its head of what a birthday is, you know? After that, like, yeah, I sense that you're going to go on a rant about it.
I'm going to fully Dennis Miller this bit, Cha-Cha.
Okay. I didn't love that, but I didn't hate it. I just kind of thought like, this is a thing that DC does. This is especially on the nose, but like at least Marv is there with a co-writer credit,
That's worth.
Well, I mean, it's better than doing this and not, I don't know. Presumably he gets a little paycheck off of this.
Sure, sure. I'm happy Marv's getting paid.
Extremely microscopic one. Yeah, okay. I'll let you rant about it. I'm just saying, I didn't think it was good. I don't think it's an abomination. And then it ends with a teaser for the Heartless thing, which has been, you know, since issue one of this Tom Taylor run, which I do not care about at all. And he's not making me care about that. So that's kind of, I don't really care to go back there. And then the only other thing I'll say is the backup, get that the fuck out of here. What is that even in here for? Oh my God.
All right.
It's to justify the page count.
Yeah.
Let's briefly talk about that. It's quote written by Michael W. Conrad and illustrated by Howard Porter. It is a silent
worse than his Wonder Woman run.
Ooh, it is a silent issue that does nothing.
Oh, it's the laziest thing imagined.
Almost indecipherable at times.
Yeah, that's the other thing. The Howard Porter art is, I mean, I'm a big Porter fan. You know this. I think it's hack work, honestly. Like, it did not look very good.
Not sorry, very Zach, kind to like, Mr. Porter. Zach, what'd you think about this before I go off on my rant?
So I've probably been the lowest on this run, I feel like, of all of us. And I've probably also read the least amount of it as well. But you know, for what this issue was, I thought it was very sweet. It was pretty saccharine. But I'm not opposed to saccharine, especially the Wolfman and Perez part. I actually found that kind of charming, and you know how sweet it was. Yeah, this kind of feels like the culmination of a lot of stuff in this run. And since I haven't been reading it, it's just like, oh yeah, Dick is done. He's fixed everything. That's really great.
Dick is the good Elon Musk.
Yeah,
in
right.
The DC universe. Yeah,
but yeah, I do really like the relationship between the Robins and between Dick and Bab. So like that's all great stuff. I'm always here for it. So you won't get any big complaints from me. As far as that's concerned,
there was one part of the main story that I wanted to sort of highlight that I don't know if we've seen this before, really. The part where Jim Gordon and Bruce Wayne are sitting in the audience at this awards gala, and they kind of say, like, the kids did good, didn't they? And say, yeah, they did. I have we ever really seen the two of them positioned as like the older generation before? I actually really liked that characterization of them and kind of want to see like an old man buddy cop book from those two characters.
Yeah.
I don't know that we've really seen that before.
I mean, that is what they should be going whole hog into, that being the status quo. I mean, they kind of are, but they're half-assing it, you know? Like,
right.
That is what DC Comics should be right now. It occurred to me when they had the Alfred Pennyworth Foundation scene that, like, oh, he's still dead, and they're letting that that happen, you know, and it just makes me think, like, do that with everything. Bruce should be a zaddy right now.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
Gordon should be a silver fox. They should be out having wacky adventures as older guys, men of a certain age. Ray Romano.
My back. ARP. But no, you know, it's I forget what book I was referring to in my soliciting column this month at Multiversity, but I was just saying one of the nice things about DC in the 90s, and I could talk about DC in the 90s all day, as you guys know, is that it really did feel for a while like there was this shift happening in terms of the major like families in the DC universe. You know, there was Tim Drake was becoming, you know, the Robin. And for a whole generation of folks like my age, he was Robin to us for a long time before there was another one. And how Kyle Rayner and all the, and there were all these characters that just felt like DC was finally starting to really up their seriousness about legacy, that we're going to make our legacy characters really feel like the most important versions of these characters out there. And DC is not doing that again, but they are, I think, really allowing themselves to embrace the legacy. But to me, the next logical step is to, and I'm not saying kill Bruce Wayne, but the fact that Barbara Gordon is almost entirely just Oracle again, because there are other Batgirls to run around. You could do something similar with Bruce Wayne, where Bruce is not, doesn't have to be the focal point of every Bat comic, because there are plenty of Batmen to go around. But you know, like you said, Vince, DC is just half-assing it. They're never really going to do that. Even though they absolutely should. All right, here's my rant on the end of this book. So I don't mind that there is this place called Marvin George's Pizza, and they go there. I don't even mind that Bruno Redondo is called upon to do a boardwalk caricature of Marv Wolfman as the owner and proprietor of Marvin George's Pizza or whatever. What I have a problem with is they're like, hey, Marv Wolfman, we need you to come in and write 2 pages of the story. All you get to do is restate the last year in the comics, and you have to do so in your own voice, playing yourself, essentially. It's such a weird assignment. It doesn't let Marv Wolfman... Like, look, I know that none of us are particularly high in the last 40 years of Marv Wolfman's comic book writing, but the dude's a fucking legend, and he's a legend for a reason, and he's a legend with Dick Grayson for a reason. And so if you're going to give him an opportunity to write a Dick Grayson scene, let him actually write a Dick Grayson scene. All he gets to do is list things that have happened in this comic. And it just be, especially because he's writing it literally at, Marv Wolfman is writing things for Marv Wolfman, the comic character who's also a pizza chef, to say. It just, it's really weird. And Redondo, who I think is usually really good, has some uncanny valley shit going on with his version of Wolfman here. And it's just, it's, the whole thing just is, it's a really poorly considered idea. I think that the broad strokes of having them go to Marvin George's Pizza is fine, but you're doing everybody dirty by making this the way that Marv Wolfman contributes to this issue.
I guess so. I don't know. I thought it was kind of sweet. It didn't bother me.
I think if it wasn't supposed to be Marv Wolfman saying it, I'd have been fine with it. If it doesn't look like any guy named Marv, or even look like 1983 Marv Wolfman instead of 2024 Marv Wolfman.
You're just offended that that the in-universe explanation for Marv Wolfman and George Perez is that they were pizza chefs and not brilliant creative minds who redefined half of the DC universe for the next 40 years. Right?
No.
Okay.
I thought you were going to turn this into some anti-Italian discrimination bullshit, but I'm glad you didn't.
I would never. When have I ever done that?
cites multiple episodes of the show.
Anyway. I think I could see the argument for like, and I don't know how Wolfman and Perez were compensated for their work, whether it was much more than kind of the sadder stories that you hear about older DC creatives or not. But, you know, and one argument could be like, maybe we should appreciate and compensate these people better when they're alive than to, you know, have these flowery appearances, cameos and whatnot in comics and owed pages in the backs of, you know, after somebody dies, like hopefully everybody's getting compensated better going forward than they had in the past, you know. That would be a good way to honor like aging creators, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know enough about their individual situations to say that, but it's something that occurs to me anytime we see these tributes, you know.
Well, to just let Wolfman write a 5-pager instead of Michael W. Conrad. Like, that's a much better solution.
That would have made way more sense, honestly.
Yeah.
And there's no way it could have been worse than the backup that we got.
The one thing I will say about DC and royalties and all that is Jim Starlin has said in the past that he made more money from the very brief Cagey Beast appearance in Batman v Superman than he made for all the Thanos appearances in the MCU. So hopefully DC is not doing its creators as dirty as Marvel does with that sort of stuff. But who knows?
Yeah. I've heard that too. Although,
which is a crazy statement to say.
It is crazy. It is crazy. DC does have their share. I can't think of any in specific right now, but I know that, you know, there's stories of a lack of compensation in the, well, I mean, to not speak of like what happened to Alan Moore and what happened to like the all the stuff surrounding like Bob Kane and Bill Finger and
right,
all
right,
that,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's copious examples, but yeah, I did hear that KG Beast thing, which is crazy.
It's so funny because he's not even referred to as KG Beast at all. It's just right. The character's like secret identity name, and it's for 10 seconds in Batman v Superman.
Right. Isn't he just called the Beast or something? Because like,
no, I think they call him like whatever his name is.
Oh, they call him his like his
Christian name. Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I could be wrong. But yeah. Wild stuff. Absolutely wild stuff. Anyway, I'm glad I don't have to do this week because Vince is back. Vince, what comes out next week?
Hang on. I've got it. I'm just... Okay. Batman Dark Age number 2. Batman the Brave and the Bold number 12. Detective Comics 1084. The Flash 8. Green Arrow 11. Harley Quinn 39. The Penguin 9, Power Girl 8, and Primer number 2.
That's a week of comics. Go to dc3cast.com for more information. I'm going to talk to you soon. Goodbye. I think all three of us are going to be low energy, Jeb, tonight.